The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to the final hour of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. We are going to be joined by attorney Dan Lust later. He is a sports legal analyst. We look forward to talking with him about all the crazy news that came down today. But before that, it's a Sports Fix at 6. We're giving away a $25 gift card to New Balance Knoxville. New Balance Knoxville carries everything from footwear to apparel to accessories, whether it's running, walking, or simply looking. Their wide selection can help you reach your goal. That's New Balance Knoxville, $25 gift card if you can answer this trivia question. All right, this revolves around Tennessee football. I thought of this because Austin Pope went down with an injury. He's going to be out for the year, and they're going to miss him at that tight end position. But here's our question. Name the last tight end from the University of Tennessee that was drafted in the NFL. Name the last tight end from the University of Tennessee that was drafted in the NFL. 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to Danny. Danny, you're on the Sports Fix. Let's go to Cody. Cody, you're on the Sports Fix.
Hey, Jimmy, how's it going?
Hey, fine, Cody.
I'm just going to throw out a name here. I'm going to say Michael Rivera.
There you go. That's who it is. It is Michael Rivera. He was the last tight end that was drafted from the University of Tennessee 5 or 6 years ago is when that occurred. Cody, one and done. Good job. You have won a $25 gift card to New Balance Knoxville. So we're going to put you on hold and get that prize to you. Good job, Cody.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And that'll do it for the Sports Fix at 6. We want to read a comment from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. This came after the Big Ten and the Pac-12 decided to shut down football this fall. In fact, all sporting activities through the end of the calendar year, which includes basketball, men's and women's basketball. Here's SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, quote, "I look forward to learning more about the factors that led the Big Ten and Pac-12 leadership to take these actions today. I remain comfortable with the thorough and deliberate approach that the SEC and our 14 members are taking to support a healthy environment for our student athletes. We will continue to further refine our policies and protocols for a safe return to sports as we monitor developments around COVID-19 in a continued effort to support, educate, and care for our student-athletes every day." Close quote, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Vince, your thoughts on Sankey's comments?
Well, it's consistent, I think, with the other statements that he's made, and it continues to show that everyone is all on their own, not only in the decisions that they make, but in their medical experts that they're leaning on, and maybe even the lawyers, the input from their respective legal teams. So just this is unfortunately major college football where everybody views things from a different perch. And, it'd be nice if we have some form of college football and we can do it safely and successfully. And the percentages of that happening are obviously dwindling. But, you know, the SEC and, you know, who knows beyond that, the ACC or the Big 12 and a few of the group of fives are still out there as well, still holding out hope that we can at least have some form of a college football season. But, Greg Sankey is standing firm that really not a whole lot has changed, even though they're keeping tabs on it.
Tony Casillas, and if this is the same one, I'm looking at a tweet. I think he's the former Oklahoma player who played in the NFL as well. Here's a tweet from him. "Players have been sent home from the Oklahoma campus. Expectations are that the Big 12 will make a decision shortly to cancel the fall season." Now, we had heard from Lincoln Riley, I don't know if it was yesterday, I think it was, that they were pausing their workouts because rather than start the season in late August, they have moved the start to like September the 26th, maybe the 19th, but it'll be later. So with them pausing the season, I thought that might have been why some players might be going home from campus. But I'm not sure that I think with Oklahoma sending players home, if this indeed is correct, that that means the Big 12 is going to make a decision to cancel the season. Maybe it does. I'm not sure if the two are necessarily related. But, gosh, Vince, I certainly hope the Big 12 doesn't make that decision today to cancel fall football.
I'd need to see more of that and more people putting that out there, Jimmy. The whole Oklahoma pausing their practice was presented as a pile-on because of COVID. Well, it didn't have anything to do with COVID necessarily or outbreaks of positive tests. It was because they were originally going to start at one date, and as you mentioned, they ended up pushing that first game back, so they wanted to give their kids a break. It wasn't because of mishandled tests or positive tests. Mm-hmm. So that just shows you that things, you can take one instance and have it mean numerous different things and have it be interpreted different ways. So I'd like to see a little bit more information on that before, you know, jumping on what that might mean personally.
Yeah, I would agree. I would definitely agree. Vince, when we come back, we've got a very special guest that's going to be joining us, right?
Yeah, so many of the things that we have been talking about in these last two days of crazy college football news, a lot of them involves legally, can they do this? Are they allowed to do that? We'll get into a lot of those topics and fire those questions at Dan Lust, who is an attorney and a sports legal analyst for Forbes magazine. He will help us with all of that from the legal standpoint next.
That's coming your way on Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. Vince, we're pleased now to be joined by a very special guest.
That's right. Help us out with all of these tangled webs and things that are way above our heads. We bring in someone much smarter than us that can help us with it and has a background as well as an attorney and sports legal analyst. You hear him nationally and a lot of shows throughout the country, and is an analyst for Forbes magazine as well. He's on Twitter at SportsLawLust. An outstanding follow. Dan Lust joins us here on Sports Talk. Dan, Vince, and Jimmy here in Knoxville. Hope you're safe and healthy. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Always quite the introduction. I don't know if I'm smarter than you guys, but I am very deep in the weeds of this apocalyptic mess in the college football front. So I'm happy to relay at least what I'm seeing over here.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And it is very complicated and obviously sad in what's transpired with these decisions. But let's jump in step by step on this. The Big Ten's decision, they are talking about their medical experts and what they're telling them, that they're not going to be able to, they can't go through the season in the fall, and they're hoping to do it in the spring. From your best judgment, do you think that this is strictly a safety issue? Is it litigation based? Is it the amateurism model with all the players speaking out? Is it all of the above? How do you view the Big Ten and now the Pac-12's decision not to play in the fall?
So I think amateurism does play a role in this. So to answer your question, I think it's a combination of the two, amateurism and really safety, but also kind of dollars and cents. So I think everyone can agree that if there was a world where football could be played safely, it would be in some type of a bubble of some sort. Question is whether college football could have afforded that. I'm probably of the opinion that they could have afforded at least the Power Five conferences, maybe conference bubbles. But you can't really put college football players alone in a bubble, assuming it was safe to play, because that's really violative of this amateurism model. If you're going to give these football players special treatment, you're identifying that they're revenue generators. So I think that's just kind of one of the death knells of the season. You can't really give these college football players the special treatment and protections without risking the model. Now, to the other leg of it, which is, I think, is the interesting one and why we're having a difference of opinion between the SEC, the ACC, and obviously the Pac-12 and Big Ten, which have already postponed. So the medical experts have differed, and we've seen this on the the baseball and football front. So Dr. Anthony Fauci, he told the league that he wanted them in a bubble. Dr. Alan Sills, the chief medical officer of the NFL, said we're not going to do a bubble. So dueling experts with two different opinions is not so uncommon in the law. What appears to be happening, on just on a dollars and cents level, if the ACC and, the top experts at Duke don't believe the virus is that much of a risk, they're taking a gamble that they're not going to get hit with that many lawsuits, right? There's no liability waivers in the NCAA anymore. The NCAA banned those. So if the ACC is right and there's just COVID is not as bad, there's not as many lawsuits, that's less of a financial hit. And meanwhile, on the other end, the advice that the Big Ten are getting and the Pac-12 are getting is that the virus is going to be worse than expected, and which would come with additional lawsuits. And guys, the reason I keep bringing up these waivers, that was really the straw that broke the camel's back. Once the NCAA came forward last week on August 5th and said, we are not going to allow schools to require COVID liability waivers of their athletes, all of a sudden, schools got very worried about the potential liability hit that could come. And that's all of a sudden why we started to see a lot of action across the college football landscape.
Well, that's an interesting point, because people have said, well, what's changed since people put out that schedule? Well, that one kind of slid through, and it was about in the same period of time. So you think that was really a big difference maker?
I think it's probably twofold. I think number one is that, that the NCAA Board of Governors officially put that down, that they weren't going to allow those COVID waivers. But the event right before that, a couple days earlier, was the Pac-12 with their list of demands. And then, guys, not coincidentally, the Big Ten with their list of demands. And you can read it into it as much as you want. Those are the first two Power 5 conferences to go, the first two that came up with their list of demands. And that, guys, is to your earlier point, the threat of amateurism and player empowerment taking over, you could have entertained those demands, but no entertainment. The football was just canceled. So if you're a conspiracy theorist, you can read into that timing as well.
So Dan Lust, sports attorney, sports legal analyst, joining us here on Sports Talk. So, Dan, another thing that has come out more recently has been the possibility, some medical experts saying that there could be heart impacts long-term that we don't know the extent of for those that get COVID-19. Do you think that what could be the litigation that could come from that if, say, someone has that and has an issue with it, maybe, 6-10 years down the road? Is that threat of the unknown many years in advance something that also scares potentially these conferences?
The short answer is yes, and that's, I think, what was behind the NCAA's ruling these COVID liability waivers to be, invalid. They didn't want them. You can, in the law, you can have a valid waiver if you know and fully understand and appreciate the risks. The problem with the COVID, we still don't know the long-term ramifications. So that's why there was, be it politicians or public policy coming in and saying these shouldn't be enforceable with respect to these athletes. Guys, I think just an interesting point in the law, there is a statute of limitations for various, if you slip and fall in New York, there's a 3-year statute of limitations on negligence, breach of contract is 6 years. When it comes to something where the actual, we'll say the manifestations of that injury, they don't show up right away, that in certain states will run from the first time you have that diagnosis. So like there's this year's worth of asbestos litigation in our country. It doesn't run from the time that you were infected. It runs from the time that you start showing symptoms. So just to know, the college athletes aren't, you're not going to lose their right if they start having symptoms 10 years down the line. We've had these cases in the law, and we've, the law has arranged for these statute of limitations to run from the time that you start experiencing these symptoms. So imagine, guys, somebody graduates college and 10 years later, then they're turning around and suing the NCAA. That's why these waivers, there's a little bit of an unfairness to them, because we don't fully know yet what we're signing up for. And just so people know that it's not just pure kind of speculation, Eduardo Rodriguez, was the number two pitcher on the Boston Red Sox. That's probably the guy who's the face of this, COVID infect, having issues with your part. So it's out there. Obviously, the numbers are still low, but, you know, we can't hide the fact that it is out there.
Dan, it's been reported that there were at least 15 Big Ten players that got myocarditis because they contracted COVID-19 virus. Do you think that was something that was very scary for the folks in the Big Ten as far as proceeding with playing football this fall?
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it weighed into their decision. I'm still kind of curious. You know, the smoke hasn't really settled at this point. I know we're seeing some reports that some Big Ten schools are going to be trying to play games, whether they're going to try to revive the Big Ten or they're going to go elsewhere, be it Nebraska, be it Ohio State. So I'm sure that was a consideration for the presidents and the chancellors at the top of the Big Ten. But, you know, these coaches were very vocal that they're not necessarily on the same page as the people at the top of these organizations. So seems to be a difference of opinion, but I'm sure those diagnoses created some hesitation.
The Big Ten and Pac-12 indicated that medical advisors suggested they not play this fall. And I wonder, do you think those conferences should release that information, release that data, say this is why we're not playing, and be more transparent with that?
They should. I don't see why they wouldn't. I think in the world we're living in today, I think transparency is good. Whether or not everyone agrees with the information is one thing, but it's important to know what's out there. And my concern, you know, I don't mean to be dramatic. I do think that this could be a signaling of the NCAA kind of splintering into, you know, fall football, spring football. I'm not sure what that means for, you know, for college basketball. You know, if the revenue is all of a sudden being split differently, at least for football. But I do think that information should be out there. There should be some transparency if these conferences are concerned with kind of the optics of unifying all of their interests and making sure they're all on the same page. Right now we're getting a lot of different messages and very different time frames from the, you know, the Power Five. So I think today, I don't want to be dramatic, but this could be, the signal of the end of the NCAA, at least as we know it.
Dan, you kind of alluded to it, too, that some schools, including Nebraska, who issued a statement and saying they're still going to explore other opportunities because they want to play today. How much of a legal hurdle is that for a school to try to opt out of a conference and try to join someone else? Notre Dame did it, but I think some of those circumstances were a little bit different. But how difficult is that for a school to say, hey, let's get together and I'll go play for the SEC or the Big 12 in 2020?
I mean, I think that's the issue that the Nebraska is looking at now. I know Coach Frost's comment says we're going to play no matter what. So you have to ask, how are they going to get out of their Big 10 deal? Maybe the Big 10 lets them walk and they say it's just kind of a weird year. And to the extent the Big 10 says we don't want you to play, it's a bad look and we don't know how it's going to impact long term. You know, there are television provisions that might hold the Nebraska in. There's something in the law called an injunction. If you try to act outside of the course of your contract, could the Big Ten seek an injunction and not allow Nebraska to leave? Sure, we can't rule that out. But I think in this world, guys, if I'm Nebraska's attorney, I'm going through all the language of my Big Ten responsibilities, my TV contracts, you know, my on-field contracts, and I'm trying to see if that force majeure language might allow me some type of an opt-out here. I mean, you have to think if Coach Frost is making those comments, he's making them with the blessing of the athletic department and making them maybe with the blessing of the legal department. So, you don't make statements like that at a planned press conference tongue-in-cheek. You have to plan for that. So I imagine there is some legal avenue for Nebraska. And the big one, we saw Coach Day of Ohio State on ESPN. They asked him if he's considering trying to make a move to the SEC, and he said he wasn't going to rule it out. So I do think that we're starting to see kind of a paradigm shift in the world of college football.
Back to the football players on campus and their safety measures. With a lot of these colleges, a lot of them still having some students on campus, the argument is that, all right, why is it different and not as safe for the football players when you have all these students on your campus? Is there any difference in terms of liability of the school on if a football, if they were to get any litigation from a football player versus if because there were a bunch of student athletes on campus at the same time. How does that all sort of blend together in the legal system for these schools?
I think it's a fair question, and that's the main comment that people are saying in my replies, and I'm seeing just really across Twitter. Why are football players, why aren't they allowed to play football if everyone's allowed to be on campus? So, you know, to the NCAA's point, they're going to say, well, football players shouldn't be treated differently necessarily than student athletes. And I think just the nature of college football and maybe the nature of this amateurism model, I'm not sure that amateurism can be consistent with college football being played in a pandemic where these football players have to really be given special treatment in order to keep the season intact. So my gut is that this all kind of lends itself back to amateurism because to give these college football players the special treatment they need to survive, number one, you might be running afoul of amateurism. But then, you know, on a second level, the point that I think is kind of behind all of this are these Title IX ramifications. If you start giving your resources and your safety resources to college football, there's an argument that you should be giving those same resources to, you know, the women's sports. What's not to say, you know, I'm sure we'd all love a college football bubble, but the way Title IX works, you'd then have to reciprocate that with an equal and commensurate, women's sports bubble on the other end. So, we're having a lot of these conversations about safety, about amateurism, but I think, too, guys, we have to factor in that this is still a business and that they're looking at dollars and cents. And to make this all work, comply with Title IX, keep amateurism intact, it would cost a fortune of money, and there's still really no cap on what that liability will look like. So, I think all bets are off at this point. If the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to call it in, I know the SEC and the ACC are all saying that, all systems are go. But let's not count our chickens at this point.
Dan, I did want to ask you this. One of the demands from players from one of the conferences was they wanted a six years of insurance being paid by the college after their eligibility was completed. Is that a reasonable request?
I guess reasonable is relative. It wasn't reasonable to ask for that in about 3 weeks to get that done before the season. That part was not reasonable. Whether college players should be getting health insurance is another question. That same question was asked in the baseball context during those labor negotiations, as well as in basketball. The players asked for long-term health insurance for playing in the bubble. I'm not sure if those demands were actually met, but to ask it is understandable, right? In negotiation in the law, you want to ask for the stars, and if you land on the moon, that's okay. But I think the loftiness of these demands did alarm these Power 5 schools. You know, if you give what's this expression, guys? If you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to ask for a glass of milk. I think if you gave a little bit, guys, we don't know how far this goes. So I do think that the making of these very lofty demands might have had a factor. Again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but people drop in my DMs and in my replies. The first two Power Fives to ask for these giant demands, those are the first two canceled. So I think there is potentially something to read into that.
Hmm. That phrase can be said for a lot of things in people other than mice, I tell you that. So Dan, on that topic of amateurism, there's been talk that the players and even in Trevor Lawrence and the We Want to Play movement, they mentioned down the road, a players association, something like that. And I've even seen a story where maybe that the NFL Players Association could maybe treat them as a nonprofit and oversee them. What do you make of that topic of, if not a union, but a players association to represent the players in college football?
I think it's interesting. I mean, we were almost here 5 years ago with Northwestern. They made this push, and it was just kind of Northwestern on an island making this argument. So they took their case to the NLRB, and the NLRB did not allow them to unionize. And the NLRB is the National Labor Relations Board. Here, you can call it the We Are United hashtag, but United has the first same three letters, UNI, as union. It's not that crazy of a concept. And if you just look at Trevor Lawrence's, this post, he posted it on Monday in the early morning hours, all of the conferences seem to have been uniting in some sense for that graphic. And Trevor Lawrence is probably the most recognizable guy in college football. Do I think that unions might happen in the college football landscape? I certainly think that we're trending in that direction. And to the extent that enough schools and schools and players, high-level players, collectively get together, I think they'll have that much more power. And I think it's just kind of an important note. Pac-12 was threatening to boycott the season, and I kind of made a note, you know, on Twitter and Instagram. You know, a strike, a traditional strike, is only as strong as the schools that choose not to participate. So if it's just the Pac-12 saying they're going to strike, I don't know if that's necessarily going to enact change across the NCAA. But if you have Trevor Lawrence leading the charge of every single Power Five conference, and as well as the, you know, the minor conferences, that can enact real change. And there can be obviously no college football without college players playing. So I think as the player empowerment starts to make its way towards college, and you have a guy like Trevor Lawrence, college football player, I don't know if we've ever seen it, if someone in the college ranks making this much noise like this, and maybe a good way. I mean, they have a voice. But, you know, that does lend itself to this union argument, and I don't think it's so far-fetched. The more we see athletes start to get paid in college, the more power and labor power they end up with.
But real quick, 30 seconds, Dan, to follow up on that, was that something that scared the university presidents and or the legal teams to help towards some of these decisions?
I mean, we'll say this, guys. In the limited time I have, we've never had a canceled college football season. So you could blame it on the coronavirus, or you could blame it on the first time across college football there was a uniting effort. So you can take your pick. Was it the coronavirus, or is it this unionization effort? I think it's anyone's guess at this point.
Dan Lust at Sports Law Lust on Twitter. Dan, awesome stuff. We could keep going and going, but we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much for your time. Stay healthy and safe out there, all right?
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right.
Thank you,
that
Dan.
That is Dan Lust. He does a great podcast as well, Conduct Detrimental Podcast, where they talk a lot of law and does a lot of national shows as well. So appreciate his insight, Jimmy.
Yes, and when we come back, we'll have more. Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
Hey, I'm Ball for Life, Bobby Scott, and we're counting it down. It's just
46 days until it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. We read earlier a statement from the SEC regarding the decisions of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to not only cancel football this fall, but all sports through the end of the year, which includes basketball. The SEC statement we read, here's one from the ACC, and it's similar to the SEC statement. The ACC will continue to make decisions based on medical advice, inclusive of our medical advisory group, local and state health guidelines, and do so in a way that appropriately coincides with our university's academic missions. The safety of our students, staff, and overall campus communities will always be our top priority, and we are pleased with the protocols being administered on our 15 campuses. We will continue to follow our process that has been in place for months and has served us well. We understand the need to stay flexible and be prepared to adjust as medical information and the landscape evolves. That is the comment from the ACC. I want to bring you a couple of comments from Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner. He was on the Dan Patrick show earlier. And one of the things that he talks about was how he feels about SEC football today.
No, it's a roller coaster ride. Today, probably better. We had some really healthy dialogue with athletics directors and with our presidents and chancellors, really information. Because we've made decisions to avoid some of the time pressures that I sense others are feeling. We've not had our players in helmets and pads for full practices. We've spread our preseason preparation out. We've moved our kickoff back to allow our universities to get back to kind of their normal fall semester order, give some time to think for things to settle out. So I felt good on Friday and then a little bit of tumult over the weekend. And we're going to keep working day to day to see if we can provide opportunities for student athletes to compete.
Also from Commissioner Sankey, he was asked about the liability factor.
Yeah, and I'm always careful not to speak for my colleagues. I've been in front of a Senate committee and visited with senators individually about liability waivers. We had some. Those have been removed by our institutions to allow individuals a couple of things. One, anyone who's not comfortable playing can opt out. We've said very clearly a month ago, we'll keep your scholarship and your place on the team. I expect this week the NCAA will deal with eligibility questions around the ability to opt out and continue to have your season of eligibility. We've also provided information on a continuing basis. We had our Football Student Athlete Leadership Council on an hour and a half video conference with very open and honest question and answers that ended up in the Washington Post. I think that's the responsibility we have with no apologies. And on our campuses, they've had continual Zoom calls with people, with parents trying to educate and inform. We've encouraged student athletes who have asked us questions, go back to your campus medical health professionals and ask them. And we've encouraged our presidents and athletics directors to make sure information is put out. So we've tried to provide as much information. Certainly liability and our obligations are a part of our consideration, but really that's an emphasis on care and education and support, which again is what we've done on a regular basis.
And the commissioner of the SEC was asked, would the SEC try to play even if other Power Five conferences opt out?
Certainly. And in the Southeastern Conference, we certainly compete, but we educate, we care, and we support. If we cannot compete, we will educate, care, and support. But we do that every day, whether we compete or not. We've been doing it since March. And I think that message is clear right now. We've not been playing games, but we've been educating, caring, and supporting. And I don't think there are quite the number of absolutes that perhaps others do in this world. We have never tried to do what we're doing in a COVID environment. It's simply another variable and a multivariable environment for us. Whatever we do, we're going to do safely. We're going to do in the most healthy way possible. That may mean some have to make decisions, whether it's support, whether it's the infrastructure they have. I think we have the capacity to support well. But again, we're going to go kind of day by day and make sure that that's in place, because fundamentally, while we want to compete, we are not going to walk away from educating, caring, and supporting young people.
That's the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, on the Dan Patrick Show earlier. Vince, what stands out to you about those comments?
Agree with a lot of what he said, not dealing in absolutes. That's not a college football principle. That's a life principle. I mean, everyone's been talking about that they absolutely know that this isn't going to happen and this is going to happen and all that. This hasn't been the time to deal in absolutes, and I think the SEC has set the bar in terms of not doing that. The one thing that I had a little bit of an issue with is the leadership council, and he kind of went from the liability topic to transparency, and he talked about the liability, the leadership council, the health council that they a lot of the student athletes were in, and he said, well, we've been front and center about that, and that story was even put into the Washington Post. Well, if you're trying to get it out, don't just give it to one outlet that a lot of people probably never saw. Release it as a league. Give multiple national and local outlets the opportunity to talk to them so that message gets out to everybody, rather than one outlet picked it up, so we were out there, we put it out there. So that was the one thing that I didn't really agree with. But overall, your thoughts on that, Jimmy? Sorry.
Well, I don't know that the SEC wanted it out. The Washington Post got it and ran with it, but I'm not. Good do you point. Think the SEC leaked it to them? I'm not so sure they did.
And maybe not, but now he's using it to say, see, this was released. So yeah. You could be right that conveniently you can say this was information we shared since it got out. But either way, that's not the approach that people are looking for in terms of transparency, regardless of what the info is.
See, my take is that if the SEC wants to get a message out, it goes through the SEC network. Hence, you saw what happened with the scheduling on Friday night, right? They made a production of it at 6 o'clock. So if they want something out, that's the venue. That's the avenue. It's not the Washington Post, in my opinion. So I think somebody with the Post got a hold to it, and the SEC said, oh, okay, well, look at there, you know. But you're right. Don't just release it to one entity. Release it to everybody. I would have a bit of an objection with that. But going back to what Dan Luss said, and this really stands out to me because he mentioned it more than once. Did those two conferences shut down because of COVID-19 concerns or player unification concerns? That was really interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why I wanted to squeeze that in at the end. But because of that talk of the unionization of players is sort of a game changer, and especially if they end up having an entity like the NFL Players Association kind of guide them through an associate, whether you call it an association as a nonprofit or a unionization. But either way, then bye-bye to your amateurism model. So I think that is absolutely a threat to them, and I wonder if the legal team said, whoa, we need some more time, and we can't give in to these things. We just need to push this back, and then we can move forward. But then again, wouldn't you think if that was the case that everybody's legal team would see it the same way for these other conferences?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting deal. All right, when we come back, we'll have our final segment with Vince Ferraro. I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. It is our final segment of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hunt, along with Vince Ferrar. And Vince, I haven't had a chance to look at this, but apparently the Pac-12 has a medical advisory document in regard to the reasons behind their decision to postpone football this fall.
Yeah, Ross Dellinger from SI put it out, and the conclusion of it is that their concerns centered around the availability of frequent FDA-approved accurate testing with rapid turnaround time, that it varied at each of the Pac-12 institution locations, and that many of the locations in the conference had community test positivity rates and numbers of cases per 100,000 in the surrounding community exceed the levels which infectious disease and public health officials deem safe for group sports. They anticipate over the next few months that the rapid point care testing will become more available, and they'll have a better understanding of potential short and long-term health effects. So therefore, their recommendation was to delay the contact sport activity and competition until a further time, until that criteria can be met. And that seems to go back to, remember, Jimmy, in that Power 5 document where they had five things that could shut things down?
Yeah.
That I don't know that ever became official, but if those were being used by the Pac-12, it sounds like those were in place, at least one of those five things came into place to where this equals shutdown and we got to go with it.
You know, they're still 6 weeks away from the first game. It seems like they could have given it a little bit more time to work that out. Except Big Brother, Big Ten went ahead, and they're like, oh, we got to follow that.
Right. Well, the positivity, the rapid rate testing, if they were told, well, this isn't going to change, you're not going to get your hands on those rapid results test anytime soon, that would be one that they couldn't. But in terms of the rates, I mean, those can fluctuate day to day, and maybe you could get an improvement on that. But it's interesting that they went the route of shut it down versus delay.
So another crazy day in the sports world, the Big Ten shutting it down. No football this fall, no sports through the end of the calendar year. That includes basketball. The Pac-12 follows suit. They do the same thing. The SEC releases a statement that said they're still going to wait and see. Same for the ACC. And the Big 12 has not made a decision yet. Also, Nebraska indicating, hey, we would like to continue to play some games if somebody's willing to jump to the table and play some games with us. I think that's highly doubtful that would occur. One thing I did like, and I meant to get to this earlier. So South Florida, I guess, is it the South Florida coach, Jeff Scott?
Yeah.
They're starting the a Power Four conference. It would be the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, and the American Athletic Conference. And then those teams would then and then Hugh Freeze with Liberty said, please add us as an independent member. So, so they're looking to go ahead with trying to have a national championship that way. And also the Steve Spurrier thing, well, just let the ACC and the SEC play their schedules because one of those teams is going to win the national championship anyway. So you got to like that from the old ball coach down there in Gainesville.
Yeah, it's vintage, and we'll talk to Pat Dooley about that and other things. He had some interesting tweets today as well, so look forward to talking to him tomorrow.
What did you think of the Ray Tanner deal, that they'll have 24.6% capacity at Williams-Brice? I don't know why he pulled that odd number, but his thought, his suggestion.
Yeah, I'm with you. How do you come up with that number? It seems strange, and I don't know if that's flexible or not. That may just be where they're at right now. But I would guess, Jimmy, that in the SEC, I think it might have been Chip Towers that might have said, hey, whatever it is, or one of our guests earlier said, they're going to do the same percentage throughout the league. They're not going to have that fluctuate.
Yeah, Chip did say that, and he said it was 20%. He gave us the number, right. Which is and then I was told Tennessee would have 20% for the student section, but not for the entire student body. We'll see. And one other quick thing about the idea of the 20-hour rule for practicing football but having no games, I can't see teams or players wanting to participate in that. So, Vince, appreciate it. Thanks. Great job. Look forward to visiting with you again tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jimmy.
And we want to thank all of our guests that joined us. We want to thank those that called, those that listened. This has been Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.